This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
Welcome. Before we get started, I just want to say that I think teaching is one of the most wonderful things that a human could do, unless you're gifted with medical things and blood and things like that that I can't do, that you're serving other people. And so God bless you for being a teacher, and God bless you for being here and spending a week to get lots of ideas and stuff like that. So, hi. So we'll just get started. This is four great helps for a multi-grade classroom. So I'm assuming all of y'all have two or more grades in a classroom, and that can be very, very challenging. We've done that a lot where we had lots of grades and had lots of shuffling to do. And so I worked diligently to try to make it run as smoothly as possible. And I hope this will help you in your classrooms. First of all, you should know those who labor among you. So here we are. That's Jeff and I in the middle. We've been married 31 years. We just went to the beach and had our 31st anniversary party or whatever. And then this is our son, Jesse. He's our oldest. He's 28. He takes out all the trash after the meals, and you might see him walking around. Our daughter, Mary, who was also a music teacher and a resource room tutoring teacher. And then this is our oldest son, who got married a couple months ago. And then our youngest son, who just graduated from high school. So this is the first year in 23, 24 years that we have not had a student like in our classrooms, which is actually kind of a relief, because I don't know if any of y'all have ever had that, but it's like your child, you're the teacher, you're like, I know. So it'll be the first time we have not had that, which will be kind of refreshing, we decided. So, and he's a mechanic, and he taught science for a couple of years, and he's building pole barns now. Hopefully he'll be back in the classroom next year. We'll work on that one. Okay, so number one, if you got your hand out, I'll try to follow it pretty closely. You've got to have, even more so than when you're the only teacher in the classroom, you have got to have a good classroom management plan. And there are a million things you could read. My favorite has been Michael Lipson, or something like that. He's really, really good. It's called Smart Classroom Management. And he just gets right to the point, and he's not, I don't even think he's a Christian, but he does have a lot of good stuff to say. And if you want to get, he writes little tiny books you can order, and they're really, really, really good. But his biggest thing is have a plan and do your plan. Whatever your plan is, do it. I don't know about y'all, but when I used to be teaching and there was something that irritated me, and I wouldn't do anything about it, I would go home at night and lie in bed and think, that girl keeps whispering to her neighbor and drives me crazy. And it was like, it's not gonna do any good for me to sit here at 3 a.m. and worry about this. I need to go over there and say, would you please stop whispering, or whatever it was. And once I realized that, it was like, that's what I'm gonna do. And if it bothers me at all in the classroom, it's gonna bother me at 3 a.m. and I don't need to lose any sleep over it. So I'm gonna deal with it. So get a plan, and then work your plan and make it real simple. And I'm gonna give you a couple of things here. So number one, you've gotta have good classroom management. You've got one of you and four different grades. So you might be working with one grade while the other three are supposedly doing something very constructive, right? So you've gotta have good classroom management. They have to know your rules, and you gotta stick to it. All right, one of those is it's gotta be quiet, especially in a multi-grade classroom. If there's talking or giggling or whatever going on, it distracts everybody. And like I said, you can only be working with one grade at a time. So what are those other two or three grades doing while you're doing that? Hopefully they're not talking and cutting up and all that. So it's gotta be quiet. We had a no talking rule, and that doesn't mean they couldn't talk. It meant they had to raise their hand before they talked, and we had lots, they could write notes, and they were edifying notes, like, may I please borrow your eraser or whatever. We had all these hand signals, you know, this was I need a Kleenex, and this was may I go to the bathroom, and this was I need to go to the library. And I could be teaching and just see the L back there and nod, you know, oh yeah, they're working on their research paper, they can go. Or, you know, and I would nod, and somebody would quietly pass the Kleenex box. We had all kinds of fun. It was actually more fun that way. And then if they really needed to say something, they could raise their hand. We had wonderful discussions. It was a very vibrant classroom, but it was quiet. So that was just our rule, and it worked really well. Deal with it. It's your responsibility and I put eagle eye on there. Your eyes, you can do so much. I would almost like make y'all practice your eyes. You can do so much with your eyes. If you see or hear anything, especially in a multi-grade classroom, so I'm teaching the third graders and the fourth, fifth, and sixth are over there, and I see something funny back there, I can just like look at them, you know, and they know, oh, she sees us. Or the one that's going, he does it, and the neighbor doesn't, or shut up, she's looking at us, or whatever. And the eyes are huge. And I did not realize this until we were at some choir concert or something. And a mom came up to me, and she said, hi, I'm so-and-so's mom. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, I taught her. And she said, do you know what she said about you? And you're like, oh, no. What did she say about me? And she said, this girl was in 10th, 11th grade. She had a lot of teachers over the years, and it was a big school where they would, you know, you had a different teacher for every classroom, whatever. And she said, Mrs. Swanson sees everything we do. Like, and I was like, I probably didn't. I did find out a couple of years later after they graduated, the class that just graduated when they were in 8th grade 5 years ago. They had a coin, and it had a secret compartment, and they would put notes in it. And they said that was the only thing they got away with. They would pass this coin or something, and that was the only thing they ever got away with in my classroom. And I was like remembering one time, oh yeah, a coin fell on the floor, and you put it in your pocket. And I thought it was just, and here they were passing it. But that, they said that was all they got away with. So anyway, your eyes, you don't have to say anything, do anything. Just the minute you see a hand, you know, look over there, and I'm watching you, Fred or Susie or whoever it is. You can do so much with your eyes, but you have to stop, right? Or even keep talking, but you have to consciously look in that direction and let them know, I might be teaching the third graders, but I'm watching you fifth graders back there, and I saw that coin or whatever it was. So your eyes can do so much, and it's quiet, and it's fast, and it works. It helps if you kind of raise your eyebrows. We do that, we just kind of... Okay. All right. The next thing is to move close to them, proximity, which usually if it was a bigger class and I had a student that I knew would chronically fall asleep or cause problems, they were always, you know, front and center. I had one boy that, bless his heart, he was that's where he lived all year long, was in this seat. And whenever he would start nodding off, I'd get really loud. He was a farmer, and he was like driving a tractor till 2 a.m, he told me. So anyway, but the first thing is just to kind of walk, like if they were whispering or whatever, you know, I could just walk over there and blah, 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 as I'm teaching or something. And I even might do that if I was even teaching up here at a table and say, y'all look at number 5, you know, and is somebody working on their work over here? Okay, thank you. Just the teacher standing, you know, near them causes a little bit of stress. Oh, I didn't stress you so that's number one. Number one is eyeballs, actually. Number two is just move. Number three, move them. And I got really good at this one year. I had a class of naughty boys. They all just graduated, actually. But when they were in, I think it was 7th grade, this was just a chronic problem. And I worked hours and hours and hours on my seating chart. And it never failed, no matter what I did. I finally got one that worked pretty well. I had 4 boys in all 4 corners. Anyway, and that was one of my favorite classes. I loved them. They were creative and funny. But there was always something, and then they would find something else to do. Anyway, but I would just say, Fred, I need you to switch with Susie. And Susie, I'm sorry, you didn't do anything wrong, but I've already given Fred lots of eyeballs and lots of, you know, little warnings and things. And they would just, they knew what to do. They packed up their books, and they just moved. And it was no big deal. So you can, don't be afraid to do that in the middle of the class. What's better, you saying move and then you know, taking 1 minute maybe and going on with your lesson, or you lying awake at 3 o'clock in the morning going, what, that boy's driving me crazy, or that girl, sorry guys. that's better. It's better just to move them. Don't be afraid to, I think so many times we're afraid to take action. Don't be afraid to take action. Raise your eyeballs at them, walk over by them, say, I'm sorry, but you gotta move. I love you, but you gotta move. There's nothing mean, I'm not being mean. Yes, I move. Number three, loss of a privilege. I thought about this one last night, actually. They have to go outside and have recess and blah, blah, blah. Let everybody else go out to recess and let that student stay there. And then when everybody else comes in, okay, now you can go. Go play by yourself for 10 minutes on the swing set. They need to get out, but can they lose a privilege? Can they, is there something you can take away from them? We'll talk about this a little bit more later, but one of my things is art. My students love art. We do a lot of art. So if they don't get their work done, or if they're or talking too much or whatever, I can just say, hey, you're going to lose your 15 minutes of art at the end of the day or whatever it is. So is there a privilege so that, yeah, they got to go outside and get fresh air and all that stuff, but they're going to lose something. It's going to be different in all of your schools. But is there a privilege they can lose? And the last one is, if it's really bad, you've done the eyeballs, you've walked over by them, you've switched them around, you've taken away whatever it is you want to take away, and they're still doing it, then it's time to say, okay, let's go out in the hall and have a little talk here. You know, you cannot do this in my classroom, blah, blah, blah. And maybe even take it to the principal, call their parents. But usually, if I've done all those three or four, I rarely have gotten to that last step. In a good culture, if they know that you love them and care about them, and you're not just being a big meanie, you're not intimidating them, you're not provoking your children to anger, you love them, you care about them, but that's not going to happen in my classroom. So remove them, and again, talk to them out in the hall, first of all, even if they're in the middle of the class. I've done that. I said, come out in the hall. One time, it was that same class, I was like, come on, we need to go outside and have a talk. And so we went out and said, look, you know, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and I turned around, and I don't know why I locked the door. I shut my door because I'm very loud, but I don't know why. And I had done it. I remember the students did not lock me out. I locked the door. So here was this kind of rambunctious class. I'm out in the hall with Mr. Talkie Guy, and I knew, oh, dear. So I kind of, like, gave him the eagle eye, and one of the girls came and let me in. But anyway, I thought this could be really interesting. I'm locked out of the room. So take him out, talk in the hall. If you need to, go to the principal or their parents, whatever. But again, if you handle this, and I found that most of the times, if it gets to the point where you have to go to the parent, that's why the child, usually, not always, but usually, is acting up, because the parents aren't hard enough on them. So if you have to go to the parent, I've had parents say, oh, you get another yellow slip? Oh, whatever, I'll sign it, I don't care. Well, that's not going to do any good. Try to handle as much of it as you can in your classroom, with your eyeballs and your proximity and talking to them or switching them around. Handle it. Don't wait till you're irritated at 3 a.m. Oh, and the last one, take them. Call their parents, talk to the principal, whatever. But again, it's so much better for your rapport with the students and how you get along with them if you can handle it before you take them to a higher authority. Okay, next, an interesting environment. And this is huge, especially in a multi-grade classroom, for a couple reasons, which we'll get a little bit more into later. But if you want it to be quiet, right? So you can't just have them sitting there. What is there to do but pass notes or giggle or make faces at my friend? What is there to do? Oh, there's lots of stuff to do, okay? And even in with high schools, I've done this with 1st through 12th grades. There's got to be an interesting environment. This is obviously elementary, okay? I might have a TP for 12th graders. I bet they go sit in it. But anyway, we've got all kinds of stuff here. Does this laser work? That is a science collection. We would find bird wings, and we found a wasp with a 4-inch stinger, an Encheron wasp or something like that. So we had all these science things in here, all these books. There are some brain games in there. Artwork was hanging up. Is there, when I'm done with my work, is there something somewhere I can go that's interesting? Or do I have to sit at my desk all the time and try to pass notes with my friend or giggle or cause problems? Are there interesting things to do in your classroom? And not only that, but do they change? And some people balk at this, but I try. Every weekend, I have a basket, and I try to get another brain game, a book, anything. Those wrap-ups. My students love those wrap-up things for multiplication tables. They're all educational things. But every week, I try to have new books, new brain games, something to where it's not just, oh, that stuff has been over there and we've seen it, you know? And I try to show them, ooh, see this new shark book? And you turn the pages and you can see the shark's guts and bones and, you know, all the, oh, that they loved that shark book. Those boys looked at that for I just left it there for almost a month because they kept looking at it before I rotated it out. So if there's something new, if they just sit on the shelf, and believe me, I have bookshelves, but if that stuff just sits on the shelf forever, who cares? You bring it out, ooh, look at this. You know, it's like, oh, okay. So do you have an interesting environment? And that takes a little bit of work. It's not just put up a bulletin board, right? But it doesn't take that much work. If you wonder how to make a reading teepee, it's super easy. I did that one for less than $10. So So anyway, here are some examples of brain games and really good books. And this was at the back of a classroom. We were pretty crammed in there. And we just had this little tiny circle table. Here's the bookshelf. And I would set different books out and usually tell, you know, show them one or two of them. And they were perfectly quiet. Their work was done with A's or B's. We'll talk about that in a minute. And they would go back there and do stuff. The only problem we had was this one is a little bit loud. It's, you have to figure out how to get the one car out. And so we had two solutions for that. One of them was they had to either have a placemat on their, actually had little placemats. If they were doing a puzzle or something like that, and it was loud on the desk, I would tell them to go get a placemat and do it quietly. And then they would just get a warning. You know, hey, I know the rush hour game is one of my favorite, but it's kind of loud. Keep it down. You know, and eventually, once or twice, I had to say, I'm so sorry, but you got to go get something else. It's just, it's too distracting. And notice, I work with the teacher that taught in Grenada, because I was really picky. I want it perfectly quiet, and I want the door shut. And she said, oh, you're crazy. She said, we used to teach with open doors and open school, and the walls only went up, and there were people screaming. And she said, the students just get used to it. I suppose I would get used to it, but it depends on your classroom. If watch your students. If they keep looking over at, you know, well, then they're distracted. Then you need to tell that student to be quiet. But I found that most of the time, they stayed really quiet, and it was a wonderful thing. There was always something interesting to do, and they weren't looking for mischief. Okay. Next, and this is also part of number one, of classroom management and safety, I call it. And we touched on this morning in our general session, which was really good. Godliness, and that, of course, starts with you, the teacher, and then your students. Depending on their age, they're not saved yet, all right? But they are in a Christian school. Their parents have put them there. They go to church. You're the teacher. You're the king or queen in your classroom. And we expect godly behavior. It's not okay to do that. No mocking. I was in a school one time, and this did not happen when I was there. It was before I got there. But this girl was in choir, and I'm going to come close to you, sorry. So she was sitting in choir like this, and she had a dress with the, you know, the ties on it. And there were some really mean students, and while she was sitting in choir, they tied her dress behind her. So when she stood up to go to choir, I mean to go to lunch or whatever, the whole chair was like attached to her. And I was just horrified. What happened? What did the teachers do? That's not okay. If that happened when I was the teacher, that would get some serious. And they were not doing it like in fun, like we're friends, ha ha. It was really just to kind of mock her and be mean and make fun of her or whatever. So that's not okay. And if anything like that happens, you know, it's all relative. I've seen some schools where it happens all the time. It's no big deal. And the same thing could happen, like he was talking about, with a different teacher. And oh boy, you don't do that in Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so's class. That's not okay. We don't do that. So it's all, you set the temperature in the room. Is it okay to do that or not? And if it's even a little thing, it's not okay. Don't allow that. Your students aren't going to feel safe there. The other ones, the poor in spirit ones, they're not going to feel safe. And you're going to have all kinds of classroom management and cultural problems if that happens. So you're the king or the queen. Don't allow mocking. Respect each other and model that. The boys and girls that usually were the most disrespectful to me, I would be even more respectful to. I'd say, yes, ma'am, Mrs. Kaufman or Ms. Kaufman, and yes, sir, Mr. Yoder or whatever, and I would show them extra respect. And I was in one school where there were some respect problems in the culture, and they never said yes ma'am to me, and I'm from the South. I know somebody said that's a Southern thing, and I said that's a respect thing. We ask our children to do that, and my children got lots of good job opportunities because they'd go to an interview and say yes sir, that's what you want, like whatever I think. So anyway, they never said yes ma'am to me. I was waiting for it all year long. I was gonna like throw a party, hey y'all get a free pizza party because you said one person called me yes ma'am, but I'm waiting all year. They never did, but it changed. It really did. So if you respect in a you know, I'm still the teacher, I'm still the queen of England, you still have to do this, whatever. But if you show them respect, they will return. Not maybe on the exact same level, but their level will change. So respect each other, you model that. You do that to them. Show them respect You're still in charge, but be polite and respectful to them. They will do that back. And the other thing is, if you model appreciating students' differences, the other students, rather than looking down on them, like he was talking about the poor in spirit, we had one student who was kind of just a awkward, goofy, he was actually very creative and funny, wonderfully creative, but he just, like, he struggled with school stuff, he struggled at sports, he was wonderful at art, I mean, really good at art, but that was not cool in that school. It became cool after a year or two, but anyway. So he would just do funny things. I remember one time Jeff came out of the bathroom and said, go look at the windowsill in the boys' bathroom. I said, I'm not going in there. And he said, well, look. So he opened the door, and it was this young man's job to clean up the bathroom. And he had taken all of the squirters and whatever and toilet paper and made a pyramid on the windowsill. He made like this art out of the cleaning supplies. One time they were out playing ball, and there were some older boys in that school, I'll tell you about one of them in a minute, that were very competitive. I mean, if you know, softball was all that mattered. And they threw a ball, and he was supposed to catch it or whatever, and he knew there was no way because it was going so far over his head, and he was the furthest one out. And he took his baseball glove, and he threw it up in the air, and on a lark, the ball hit the glove. Did he catch it? I don't think he caught it, but everybody just laughed. And that boy went from being, you know, the low life, poor in spirit, dork, can't do school, can't do anything, we didn't respect their family, him, whatever. He actually, we kept just saying, did you see so-and-so's arm? Did you see what he did? And he, because we were modeling, appreciating what he was really good at, his self-confidence and the way the other students treated him changed. So you can model that as a teacher. And if you do that, those students are going to feel more safe. They're going to start participating in class more. They're going to start doing better work for you because you're modeling that. And that in my classroom, this is how we treat people. This is what we do. So you got to have godliness, quiet workspace, interesting environment, all those things so that when they walk into your room, that's what it is. That will really, really, really help managing all these different grades. What about outside the classroom? One time, and again, it was our first year there, so we were in the process of changing the culture over. One of these boys, who I think they were like 16 and 17 or something, they were brothers, and they would like yell at each other and cry on the softball field, you let that ball get away, whatever, and we were horrified, but they were really serious about this. So one day, it was really, really cold outside or something. What was it, Jeff, do you remember? Never mind. It was a little cold. And so they were inside playing something, and Jeff did PE because we traded. I would do history, and he would do PE because I love history, and I don't want to run. And so when I first walked in that room, actually the one boy said, Mrs. Swanson, are you gonna play kickball, whatever, with this? I said, no. And he's like, why not? And I said, because I don't run. And he went, oh, very funny. I said, I'm not joking. So Jeff was doing the sports, and they were playing some tag. Was it tag? Okay. Tag. He always tells me I'm running out of time because I talk too much. Anyway, they were running around, and he, no joke, took a metal folding chair. So he was the last one, and this last girl, 17-year-old girl, was trying to catch him. And he was the last boy. They were playing where you run around the chairs, like pie tag or something. I mean, he grabbed the metal folding chair and turned around and threw it at her. And she tripped over it or whatever. Like, that's not okay. That's not okay at all. The sports thing can really get bad. So be careful. And if... what were we... We were even with my little bitty school this year. We were playing basketball, and the one boy... I'm going to beat all of you, ha, ha, whatever. Okay, we didn't play basketball again for a couple weeks. And then the rest of the year, when we played basketball, it was like, okay, make a basket on one end, then you have to dribble it all the way down and make a basket on the other. Like, I did not like that attitude. I did not like that competitiveness. We got to where we would play games where you had to pass the basketball, you know, around the circle and then bounce catch. I got real creative with all these different games we were going to play. Because I did not want that attitude. Now, when that goes away, oops, or I could say, you know, we're going to play a game today, but you're not going to, you know, try to, you know, Yeah, you beat me at basketball. Look at me. Come on. Anyway, so, and it breaks. Another quick story. There was a school. Again, it was not, this happened before we were there. But one of the students, and I believe she was in high school at that time, told me, oh, we have so much fun at recess. And I'm like, well, recess is always fun. And she said, oh, no. She said, when I think it was first or second grade, she said, we would go out to recess, and they had to walk out the front door and buy this brick wall. And she said the older students would take tennis balls and just try to pelt them at them as hard as they could. And she said, we would cry, and we were afraid to go outside. I'm like, where are the teachers? What were they doing? Like, that's not okay. Even if you aren't there at this moment and you don't see it, if you the students should know it's safe to come to tell you about it and that you will take care of it, because that's not okay. A first and second grader getting hit hard crying because they got hit with a tennis ball, whatever. Anyway, that's not okay. So not only have an eagle eye, but know what's going on at breaks, at sports, monitor that. If your students don't feel safe, you're going to have an uphill battle in many other areas. So that's kind of a basic atmosphere. If you want to know more about culture, we'll talk about that in another session. I think it's on Thursday. Okay, so deal with it. It's your responsibility. Give them the eagle eye. Go closer to them. Move them. If you need to, take them outside. Just make sure the door is unlocked when you do it. And then last, if you need to go to their parent or the school board or something like that, you know, look, this is bad enough. We got to go. Okay? All right. Now, this is my favorite line, and it works really well. And you have to practice it so that you've got it ready to go on August 25th or whatever. So it's, first of all, it's just a kind of nice when you walk up and say, that's not allowed in my classroom. Ready, go. That is not allowed in my classroom. I didn't hear you. Come on. That is not allowed in my classroom. That's a really nice, just come up and say, that is not allowed in my classroom. All right. The second one is that, what you just did, whatever it was, is not allowed in my classroom. You're getting a little bit sterner now. You're still nice. You love them. You're happy self. But that's not okay. Ready, go. That is not allowed in my classroom. Okay? All right. Next one, not. Emphasis on not. Ready, go. That is not allowed in my classroom. And the last one is my favorite because I'm the queen. That is not allowed in my classroom. You might do that across the hall, but you ain't doing it in here, right? So that, honestly, that line has been just wonderful for me. And it lets the students, and it almost sounds scarier than it is. It kind of like, they're like, ooh, and you're just saying a sentence. It kind of doesn't mean anything. What are you going to do? But it nips so much in the bud and gets rid of it. So just say it. Practice it. That, and that's all you got to do. And they'll be like, oh, she doesn't allow this, so I won't do it. He doesn't allow me to do this, so I won't. You're setting a standard. You're raising the bar a little bit, and hopefully they won't do it again. All right. Opposite of all this mess is we're on a team, we're going to work together, we're going to get this done together. All of us, no matter how many grades we're in, all right? Number two, this is gold, a great working schedule. I have spent hours and hours, I spent hours on my schedule for this coming year. I finally got it correct, and I found out this one student was not in second grade reading, he's in first grade reading. Of all the things, like algebra or first grade reading. So I'm in the process. I brought it with me. I've got it upstairs by my nightstand. And I'm working on my schedule. You've got to have a good schedule. All right, here is the number one thing in a multi-grade classroom. Have up on the board stuff that they can do on their own that you can grade. All right, and again, I do go over spelling with my students. I try to get them reading every day out loud. So I do these things with them. But these are things that it's not like the new math fraction lesson and the new diagramming direct objects or something. It's stuff that they can do on their own and maybe ask you if they have a question, or when we get to the reading lesson, we'll read out loud, but did you look over the comprehension questions? So I write those things on the board, and I would have them in the order I wanted them to do it, so they could look up and go, vocabulary first, lesson 4-H. I did that. So while I'm teaching the third graders and the fourth graders, the fifth and sixth graders have this checked. Everybody has this checklist on the board of what they're supposed to do. Next, spelling. If she still isn't ready for me to come up from my lesson, I do my spelling. To do. Next, the reading. Look at your vocabulary words, because we're going to go over them in reading class, and you need to have read the story on page 47 to 49. We'll cover that in reading class. You're getting ahead. Isn't that awesome? You're getting ahead. Woo, you're going to have more time to do art at the end of the day or whatever it is. And then your journal assignment, right? When you get everything done, you get your fund, and that's a whole other topic. But I love journal writing, and my students, I use it as a, that was one of my punishments this year. I was tweaking my schedule around, and I said, okay, we went to lunch 10 minutes late again, so you can't do your journal. No! Until you get your work done. The next day, guess what? The rest of the year, guess what? They got it done because they wanted to do their journals. No joke. Okay, so this was 1 year. We had two separate rooms. We had 3rd through 6th in one room. We had 7th through 12th in the other one. So while Jeff was teaching the 7th, and notice these are bigger sections. This was maybe a 15, 20-minute spot. This was maybe a 30, 40-minute, whatever it was, 20, 30-minute spot. And we had this schedule, boom, 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 because Jeff and I were teaching 3rd through 12th grade. It's a lot of grades for two teachers. So I would do spelling, and again, we had a little table. They would come up. We did their spelling lesson with the 3rd graders while the 4th, 5th, and 6th were working on their list on the board. And then when they were done, 4th grade, come up, boom, boom, boom. Done 5th grade, come up, boom, boom, boom. And I didn't have this set in stone. I still do have a guideline. I don't want to be too far off. But you know what? Sometimes the 3rd grade spelling might be a super easy review lesson, and it might only take 10 minutes. But you know what? The 4th grade might have some really hard words, and they might take 15 or 20. So it's more the order than it is the time, right? As long as you have lunch and your breaks at the right time. You can fudge a little bit in there because some are going to take longer, some are going to take not as long. And then Jeff was over here teaching math, and then we would flip-flop. He would come and do 3rd grade math, 4th grade math, 5th grade math. I would go and do 7th grade English, 8th grade English. And we had this schedule. And again, I spent a lot of time on it, but that way the students were always busy. There was always something. What's next on the board? Did I get that? Time to come up for my lesson, go back to my English lesson, turn that in. Now I'm back on my reading. They were kept busy, and there was a schedule. And our goal was to get everything turned in by lunch. And they did, with very few exceptions, with A's and B's, because I made them do fix-ups if they didn't. Talk about that in a minute. But they were motivated. They knew everybody's getting their work turned in. We got to do this. That was our culture. The other thing I did that was very helpful, this is actually one of my students from this past year, and he was more of an artistic daydreamer or whatever, and so I did it for him, and then the other students wanted one. So I made this little checklist, and they didn't check it off. I did it on cardstock, and I sticky tacked it to the top of their desk, right? And it sort of served the same purpose as this, but this was their order. They did this first, they did that next, they did that next. And some of these were with me. Obviously, their math lesson was with me. Their English lesson was with me. But some of this other stuff, so it alternated. Do this on your own. Do this with the teacher. Do this on your own. But it was constant. What do you get done? What do you get done? Any questions on any of this so far? And I did have some breaks in there, like once they got their math and spelling done, they could go read a book before they went to do their piano practice or whatever it was. There were, but they knew it was only you can go read one book or you can go play one game for 5 minutes or something. And I would monitor that so they didn't just goof off, right? Okay, the other thing is revise, revise, revise. You've got to keep it, like I told you, halfway through the year, it got to where they were kind of lallygagging. Is that a word, as my mother would say? And so I said, all right, we were doing our journals all together when we did Bible. And we're running late now. So after Bible, we're going to have to go straight into English and do our rotation on that. And then if we get everything done on time, then we'll do your journals. And I think we only missed journals 1 or 2 days. And they made sure we need to stay on that. So we get to do something fun that's still educational and good as a reward. So the schedule is huge. And don't be afraid to tweak it, rearrange it, see what's not working. And I just make notes. So-and-so, you know, Fred's taking too long with math. Susie is goofing off with her English or whatever it was, okay? All right, stand up. Seriously, y'all are getting a little, stand up. Kick your right leg 3 times. Kick your left leg 3 times. I've got 20 more minutes. Okay, sit down, thank you, bye. Number 3, motivation. This is huge in a multi-grade classroom. In a single classroom where I have all 7th grade, I'm like, this is your English, blah, 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 blah. Bell rings, get out. Next class comes in. This is your math, blah, blah, whatever it is. In a multi-grade classroom, it's not like that. There are no bells. They're kind of on their own, right? So to motivate them to get everything done on the board or the little sticky on their desk or whatever it is, You've got to have motivation. And this is huge. It will keep everything upbeat. They're going to stay on schedule. With my students this year, one had homework one time, and she decided she wanted to stay after school and do it, and her mom said that was fine, so I let her. And the other one, a little boy, a couple times missed some art, and that just, I think it was twice, and he was like, I'm never going to do that again because I don't want to miss art. And I'm like, good for you. And he didn't. The rest of the year, he didn't miss it. So do you have a system in place? Again, not you're in trouble, you're getting demerits, you have to stay in detention. You missed art. It's kind of a good one if you've got good art projects, which if you need some of those, I have them too. So motivation, a teacher who loves learning and models that in the classroom. Especially in the dead of winter, I come to school sometimes and it's like snowing and I got my coffee and I'm like, oh. But I can't show my students that. I can't. And so those are the days I'm even more like, hey, did y'all see that neat science experiment we get to do today? We were studying, you know, whatever, we get to do this. Or, I've got a great new art project for y'all that I found. There's got to always be something. And you know what? I almost do that. This kind of sounds selfish, but I almost do that for myself because I want to have something to look forward to besides my coffee in the morning. I enjoyed the science experiment. I enjoyed the art. We're going to diagram compound subjects today. Yay. You know, whatever it is there something that you're looking forward to? Your students will pick up on that. Even if you have to fake it a little bit, find the one thing. You know, for me, it's art sometimes. If there's nothing else, I'll think art. So a teacher who is careful in responding to student answers. Did you notice this morning Stephen said there is no wrong answer? Oh, and people started saying more, the teacher's worldview and things like that. We had a teacher one time in our Sunday school class. We called him Teddy Roosevelt. No joke, he had a mustache, little glasses. He really did look like Teddy Roosevelt. But he would have the one perfect answer in his head, and he'd say, whatever, da-da-da-da-da. And some brave, and we were like 30. Some brave soul would say, da-da-da, and he'd say, no. What's another answer to that? Come on, da-da-da-da. And another person would, da-da-da-da, no. You know what it is, it's this, and all y'all are dumb, and I'm smart, and no, this is my answer, or whatever. It was like, oh, and it got to where nobody wanted to answer him. So be careful. You want them to talk, you want interaction, you want them to answer. So I'll say something like, that's close, yeah, she's headed in the right direction. Does anybody have another one? Or, that happened later. Or, you know, or, well, sort of, but not quite, you know, don't embarrass them and just make them feel like they're wrong. They'll never want to answer again. So as much as you can, be gentle and encouraging, all right, and don't just shut them down, all right? A teacher who relates to them and tells them how hard you try. Did you not have a little bit more respect for Stephen Gingrich this morning when he said, you know, if I had another day, I'd probably change this again. I was changing this last night. Like, what time was it? Jeff was like, turn the computer off, the light's bothering me. And I'm like, hey, whatever. You did. And you were probably asleep. Well, okay, he was going, you remember that? He did. So I'm like, oh, I want to move this slide around here because I need to talk about this before I did that. So I want y'all to know this matters to me. I think it's important. That's why I was up at 11 o'clock last night bothering my husband with the light, because this matters to me. This is important to me. I never realized the value of this until I had a seventh grade boy who really didn't enjoy school and didn't like school that much, but he said, Mrs. Swanson, I think he wrote it down. I was picking their brains for something, and I said, tell me why you do this or something like that. And so they'll write it. They won't tell you, and they won't say it in front of the class, but they'll write it down. And he wrote something like, it doesn't really matter to me, but it matters to you. And it matters to you so much that it makes it matter to me. That was eye-opening. So tell him, I was up till midnight working on this English lesson. You better like it, you know, or whatever. And you know what? Well, if my teacher, my beloved teacher, you, king or queen of your classroom, was doing this, maybe it is important. Maybe I should do it. And it matters. It won't happen the first time you tell them. Keep telling them, though, and eventually they'll get it if you're consistent with that. Okay. And last, Barnabas is one of our favorite Bible characters because he was called the encourager. He was encouraging, all right? Even if they make a C all the time or something and they finally got a B, encourage them. That's great. Or they did something. Remember, you're looking for the poor in spirit. whatever that student does that needs attention, right? They did this. They, hey, you hit the softball so far, you broke the window, or whatever it was. Or, wow, did you read so-and-so's research paper introduction? Or, hey, did you see so-and-so's art? Always be encouraging every single student and look for those things, and that is gonna help motivate them. Huge. All right, be accessible content. This drives me crazy. There are some curriculums that are super tedious. There's a lot of busy work, super heavy workload, and the students just get bogged down. I was working with the school recently, and they were using some Bible curriculum that the students had to do on their own, and it was like four or five pages a day. And I said, combine the classes, do this one on the highest grade level. That way that person's, you know, getting it, and the younger ones will be fine. It's a page and a half. Read it together, take turns reading the Bible verses, discuss it together, write the answers down. And it's way better, it's way less tedious. If you don't have the option to do that, is there a way that you could combine it, and we're all gonna do it together rather than do it on your own? The workload, I will never forget the first year I had used Abeka English, it was several years ago, but it was like, and if y'all have ever used it, it's like, you know, 60, whatever, and they're all like 10-point font, and they're all like crammed together, and there's no room in between to diagram and all that stuff. And it was just like nuts. And the girls were like, they were getting it, but the boys were just like out. It was too much. It was way too much. And I went to Dr. Burkholder, and she's here today this week teaching. And I said, what on earth do you do with this? It's just they're not making good grades, because if I told them to do 10, they'd probably do it, but they're supposed to do the whole lesson and blah, blah, blah. And she said, oh, just do the odds. Earth-shattering. It changed my life. It changed my students' life. There's still 40 on there, so they're only doing 20 or whatever, but just do the odds. And it was life-changing. And that way it looked manageable. They weren't burdened down. I think sometimes our curriculums burden our students down. So you're the teacher. You're the king or queen in your classroom. Take a little flexibility. By the way, I finish every book I start. I don't just goof off and, oh, we're only doing half of it. And by the end of the year, we took the final test, we finished the whole book. So I'm not saying leave stuff out. I'm saying cut down, weed out the tedious, busy work and content. If your students are bogged down with a bunch of work and it's tedious for them and they're tired and it's hard, it's gonna drag things down. And y'all know how that goes. You've got four grades in a classroom, they're all bogged down. All right, and finish your work. Get that work done. We want it handed in by lunchtime. I had three baskets, and their spelling went in there, and their vocab went in there, and their English went in there. Boom, boom, and their journals went on my desk or something. But they had to do it, and it was like a reward. They got to get up and put that thing in the basket. One year, I taught at a self-paced school. We will not go into that. If you'll know my opinions on it, come ask me later. And they weren't willing, they didn't want to change the curriculum. But I had to think of something, so I told them when they finished their book, and they were in their little boxes, they could turn around and go, pop, you know, gently, respectfully, I love my book, but pop, I finished math. And boy, pop, 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 oh, I got it, pop, I got my math done too, pop, English, pop, 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 you know. Think of something to do that they want to get their work done, all right? And then reward them. Hey, everybody got their work turned in? Great, you should all have your spelling turned in. Vocab's next, do your vocab. So next group, come up with me. Keep it moving, keep it upbeat, keep it positive. Grade everything, we'll get to that in a minute. They have to turn it in because you're holding them accountable. You're the teacher, you're grading their work. Any questions? Okay. So get your work done with an A, all right? And what I would do is another thing. So they could go to their little stations like this and do their fun stuff. They had to have an 85 or higher in every subject. If they got an 85 or higher, and I graded all their work every day, if in one of those classes they had an 84, then nobody knew, their name just wasn't on the board. If your name is on the board, you have permission to go up and go to a reading center or play a board game or whatever, I mean, not a board game, but whatever. And so I could just look up there and I would try to remember, because usually there weren't any or only one or two, because they wanted to make good grades so they could, when they finished, they could go do something. So they had to have an 85 or higher, and then they could go. This is a memory game. They're playing checkers. This was the bananagrams. They would have a dictionary there, and they had a whole system of, and they would look it up, and they were quiet the whole time. So that's another good way to use that as a motivation to get your work done. And you let one person finish and go back there and do something fun, they're going to want to get their work done too. And if you keep the standard, they have to have an 85 or a 90 or whatever you want or higher, or they don't get to go, you watch. Peer pressure can be so harming. It can be so positive and motivating if we use it the right way. So get their name on the board, they get to go do it. Books, puzzles, brain games, whatever you can think of that's good to do. Books. I do like the little library thing. This is our new book. And this one, I found it at a thrift store. I could tell by the cover it was a good book. It was fabulous. There are circles all through the whole book. The whole book is circles. It's awesome. And so I got that book and I said, hey guys, look what I got. This is a book about lighthouses and it's got beautiful art in it and it's awesome. And I was like, and so we can read that, whatever. So before we even got to our story time, a couple of them had already finished their work and gone back there and read it. We read that book. They wanted me to read it out loud to them like 3 times. It was so fabulous. And every time one of them had they got their work done and I looked over, they read that book and read that. It's fabulous. It was like a month long of We Love This Book. It's in the bookstore. If you want to go grab it, Hello Lighthouse. Fabulous. If it has a gold sticker on it in your thrift store, look at it. All right. Trampoline. In the middle of winter, I said you can, for every time you finish a subject, every time you hand in your vocab or your spelling or your English, whatever, you can go jump on the trampoline 20 times. So boy, they would hand that thing in, they go up there, boing, 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 you know, 20 jumps, that was it. It wasn't distracting. They loved that thing. I thought, I'll do it for a week or two. It was there almost like 6-7 weeks because they loved it. And it was winter. We need some extra exercise. And then can I go lie down in the reading hut? As long as you're reading, I don't care. Get your work done. It's a good grade. Go lie down in the reading hut. It's fine with me. All right. If you do this motivation thing, it keeps things upbeat and moving. I want to turn my book in, go jump on trampoline, go read a book. There's positive peer pressure to finish their work. Susie finished, Fred finished, I need to finish. I don't want to be the last one. There's something interesting to do, always in sight, and again, try to rotate it. It could just be something on your bookshelf, but bring it out. Ooh, look at this shark book. And it creates motivation to keep their grades up. Because if their grades aren't up, they can't go read the new book or look at the new game or whatever it is. And by the way, I get 90% of my stuff at thrift stores. Okay, grade fast and return. If they know, I had a teacher in third grade, and I would, every once in a while, honestly, I would come in and there'd be this huge stack of papers on my desk. She never graded them for weeks and weeks and weeks. And I would come in and look through, and there was a test I'd gotten a B or a C on, right? And then all the worksheets I had done before that test, I made all these mistakes, but she never graded the paper, so I never knew that I was making all these mistakes. So guess what I did when I got to the test? I made the same mistakes. And I will never forget that. It was so frustrating. Like, I could have done better if she would have let me know. So except for research papers, I grade as soon as I can, and I make them do fix-ups. Those, usually, they're back on their desk that day at the latest the next morning. So they can look at those papers and know what they did wrong. And part of the reason I do it is for accountability, because I don't want them slopping through their work. And I'll say, hey, you can do your fix-ups now, or you can miss recess if you want to. And they would rather stay in and miss 2 or 3 minutes of recess and do their fix-ups than miss art at the end of the day or something. I tell them, you have to have it done by the end of the day. You've got to do your fix-ups. So grade those papers fast and get them back to them. That gives you so much power. It really does. It gives you a ton of power and a ton of leverage in your classroom. All right, and then require them to do fix-ups because it's accountability, and that way they won't do it fast and sloppy. You're demanding that they get that work done. You're setting a really high standard. And it seems, I know some of y'all are going, there's no way. My students, whenever I drop food on their paper, I write chocolate mousse, salsa, drawn error. So they know I drop, but when I'm eating lunch, I get all of their papers. They just kind of laugh, oh, look, Mrs. Swanson got salsa on my paper. During choir, Jeff would do choir the years that we did a multi-grade classroom together. And so I would sit there and sing during choir, and he'd be like, somebody's singing tenor. Oh, I wasn't looking at my music. I was reading paper. Sorry. Do it whenever you can. Sneak it in, but do it. It gives you so much leverage with your students. And it really, if there's one thing that gives you more power, that elevates you in your students' lives, besides godliness and the way you live, it's grading their papers. When I started doing that, I was amazed. I got a 97, or oh no, I got a, you know, it, I need to go fix that because my teacher expects me to get a good grade. It gives you tons of power in their eyes, in a good way. All right, do little bitty things. Put a sticker on there. I had senior boys say, Mrs. Swanson, that was a good sticker you put on my thing, whatever. Or what is this? Sometimes I put funny stuff on there. What is this? Put little stickers on there. Give them little mini candy bars. I throw them across the room, or Hershey's Kiss, I know, or raisins, or whatever, something healthy. Have them write their own academic goals. Every quarter, I would have mine do that in their journals. What was your lowest grade in science, whatever? How can you bring that up? Make them write their own goals. That way, they're being more self-motivated. Big things. This is a whole other topic. But in the past, we've done achievement parties. We've had 100 clubs. Every time you got 100 on a test, you got a sticker, but you got 10 stickers. You got whatever. It wasn't anything big, something little. Give the highest GPA at the end of the year. You know, Susie had a 98 average and Fred had a 97. That will get your top motivated students, right? But these other ones, everybody can do, right? And you just set a goal. You can get to go to this was a medieval party and they threw peanuts on the floor and whatever. If you've got an 85 or higher, go to the party. If you have a really struggling student, get a C or higher, you can go. We had some students turn in every assignment, even if it's a 20, turn in every assignment. And they were, obviously, they were in the resource room, but something to motivate them. It's so worth it. We would spend a day or, you know, a whole evening on these parties, and I'd be so tired, and I'd go back to school, and the next 9 weeks, they were motivated. It was amazing. Figure out what motivates your students and do something. And keep trying different things. If the first 5 things don't work, try number 6 and number 7. You'll find something that'll motivate them. All right, last, spontaneity. Planned spontaneity. I will not recommend everything in this book, okay? I started to put it at the bookstore, but I think I did. Jeff picked this up somewhere. There are 3 volumes of it. And during the darkest, dreariest winter days, there was just some hysterical, funny things in there. That was one of them. You put Mentos in a diet pop can, and it goes cuckoo. Just have some things like that planned. You know, hey, today we're going to do this. And don't tell them. I've got something fun planned for morning break or whatever it is. But plan spontaneous things. The students will always be wondering, what are we going to do next? And it just creates a whole different atmosphere of learning, because it's usually educational, and fun, excitement. We're going to go fly a kite. It was really windy one day, and I'm like, hey, we got a kite, let's go fly a kite. And I planned it. I had to go down and get the kite out of my basement, but plan these things out of the ordinary. They wanted to fly a kite for the next 3 weeks. I'm like, there's no wind, it won't work. They didn't care. They wanted to go fly the kite. Art is another great area you can be spontaneous with. I saw a wood burner somewhere, I think it was the dollar store, and I was like, hey, we're going to do wood burning, right? Oh, they love that. Can we do 3 or 4? Yeah, sure. It's art. It's kind of science. You're burning wood. It smells kind of bad. But it was something different, right? If everything is the same old, same old, same old. I had a student would tell me one time, well, I don't care. It's just going to be volleyball and hot dogs. Do we do the same thing over and over to our students? I had a job one time, it was in a hotel, but there was always something. Today they baked sugar cookies, and today we've got fried chicken. I know it's food, I like food too much. But we're gonna do this today. We're gonna redecorate the lobby. There was always something fun and exciting going on. Workplaces do that. Have you ever seen the motivational things, how much money they spend and all that on their employees? Why do we do that to our students? Same old, every day, nothing's different. Be spontaneous, plan spontaneous things. I was having a hard time with them kind of to the end of the year. I wanted to finish our books, and we needed to do a little bit of extra work. And I said, okay, if y'all finish your work, we'll go on an extra field trip. And we studied the tabernacle in the Bible, in our Bible curriculum. So we went to the tabernacle replica, whatever. And then we went out for ice cream. They finished all their books. They got an extra field trip. No big whoop. It was educational. It was wonderful. Are you looking for things to motivate them? It's so easy to just say, I'm tired, but it's so worth it when you go to school and they're motivated. It'll motivate you if they're motivated. All right, unplanned spontaneity. These are kind of fun because you don't do anything, your students do. They come up with the stupid stuff and you get to go along with it. Okay, this is a funny story. Okay, They wanted to play Foursquare. And so we researched how far the Foursquare court is. So I went outside and I marked it off with masking tape and we played Foursquare. Well, then it snowed, the masking tape came off. And one day I had this great idea. I'm like, hey, let's paint today. We'll paint the Foursquare. This is on our driveway, by the way. And so we went out there. We had such a great time painting it. And Jeff came home and said, what on earth did you do to the driveway? And I said, well, we painted it. I thought I just had this spontaneous idea that we would do whatever. Anyway, so he sanded. He tried to sand it. It didn't work. So I had to put stripper on the driveway. Anyway, we got it off. But I thought it was a great spontaneous idea. We were sitting at lunch one day, and this huge hornet flew by. And my first grader said, Mrs. Swanson, what is that? And I said, I don't know. Where'd it go? And I said, y'all stay back. And I got a cup and I found this giant, and I thought it was a murder hornet, and I was going to call the government and say, I found a murder hornet and come out and get it. Whatever, it wasn't. It's a European hornet. So we researched it. It had these little things on it. The yellow goes down to a teardrop, and that's a European hornet. It just flew by and I didn't even notice it. My first grader did. One day I tripped over a doll during a spelling test. I said, what is this? And they said, well, I brought my doll to school. And I said, okay, well, let's put the doll under your desk. The next day there were like five dolls and all the girls bring dolls. So I said, okay, the dolls need to go into the doll nursery. Can they go take a nap? And they did. They obediently put them in there. Well, they started showing up. This was at our morning devotion chairs. So the next day the dolls were in the morning devotion chairs, and then the dolls were reading in the morning devotion chairs. And we didn't do anything. We just said, be creative. Then they had an orphanage for the dolls. God bless them. I hope they all go work in an orphanage in a mission field someday. We didn't do anything. They did it. Your students, it has to be creative. I've heard of things like, can we have Mohawk Green Hair Day? No, that's not edifying. You can't do that. Can we have a doll orphanage for missionaries? Yes, you can. Look for motivating things. I'm sorry, not motivating. Creative, edifying. Edifying is the word I wanted. They want to do edifying things. Let them do it. Encourage them. Don't have it in the classroom. You know, move it, whatever. And then this is my last thing here. One time I was teaching history and Jeff came in and he said, you gotta come outside. We did something really fun outside. I'm like, I'm in the middle of the dark ages or whatever it was. And he said, you gotta come outside. And one student had thrown their coat up in the air and it was windy and it stuck to the thing. And then another, and Jeff said, throw some more up. And so the whole school was out there and they were, look at that, that's art. It was great. We had a wonderful time just because one third grader threw his coat up in the air. It was awesome. Your students, if you let them, ooh, I'm going to talk about that later. The older they get, the more cool and boring they get, the younger they are. Encourage that. Nourish it. In a small school, it'll affect everybody, and it's wonderful. Let them be creative. Make sure you're the queen or king, pointing it in an edifying direction. Let them do it. Your students will have so many creative things. You should still plan some, but they'll do it too. One day they were doing the bricks on the wall. We opened the window and talked to the bricklayers in Spanish, by the way, because we were learning Spanish as well. And we asked them if they'd put some fossils in the wall, and they did. We were like handing fossils out the window, and they're like, sí, en la calle, whatever. Yeah, sí, muchas gracias. When the geese fly, go outside and watch the geese honk. Look how they fly in a V. How come that one's in the back? Why is that one in the front? Why is one in the front? One in the back? When the oil truck comes, can you try to keep little boys in their seats when the oil truck is out there filling up the oil? I can't. I just tell them, let's go to the window. Good. Look at that. Yeah. Okay. Now go back to your math. Break that math down and get it turned in. These are all spontaneous things that you didn't plan that just happened in the classroom. Okay? All right, I have some resources for art. If you're interested, I put them in the room. 75 projects for art ideas. 55 are related directly to history. 20 are just art for the fun of it. And they're in that resource room thing, whatever. I don't even know what room it is. If you have any other questions, wait, I'm not done talking, sorry. That is not allowed in my classroom. You have to obey Mr. Strickler and wait till we're all done talking. If you have any other questions, I love education and I love to talk about it. And come ask me to talk if you want to talk about any of that. And have a good rest of your week. Bye.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.